We continue. You are the light of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. People do not light a lamp and put it under the bushel basket. Rather, they put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, my hunch is that if you've been in church more than a year, you've heard this passage preached on before. It has worked and wormed its way, the first 12 verses or so, the Beatitudes, into many common sayings, and then the two little pieces at the end, salt and light, have found their way into a number of places as well. So the challenge being that the way we use them now, often we forget where they come from. So if we're going down the street and you see somebody you know and your friend says, oh, they're just great salt of the earth people, what do you really mean? Oh, they're just good, decent, hardworking, everyday people. Is that what Jesus means here? We teach our kids, and I can usually get a jubilant response when I say that we're going to sing This Little Light of Mine, right? But do we think about what that means? Do we think about it comes from the words of Jesus, or do we think it's just a cute song we remember from when we were this high and the words are burned indelibly into our memory? That's the challenge with some of these famous passages. They get so famous that we just think we know what's going on. And so we skim right across the surface. So today we'll go a little deeper. Can't go too deep. We didn't even manage to cover all of it in Sunday school. We took extra time. This word blessed, it gives us fits. Let's be honest. It gives us fits. For me to say I'm blessed almost feels a little bit arrogant, doesn't it? I mean, how do I sit here and say I'm blessed and you're not? A little bit there. And it's hard to say, where does it come from? You know, how do I know? Now, Matthew is perhaps the most Jewish of all the gospel writers, and Jews would never say blessed about people. That would only be about God. Blessed be God Most High. Baruch Atah Adonai. And so it's already a little weird here. Going back to the Greek doesn't help, because that's happy. And I don't think happy hits what Jesus is saying either. Happy are you when they persecute you for my sin. That's not how that works, is it? And so there's this land we have to land in here that's somewhere between blessed and happy. And we have to struggle with them a little bit. Who are the meek? Part of our conversation in Sunday school this morning was noticing that about the first 9 verses say, blessed are those. Then verse 10 is, blessed are you. That's some of our temptation too, isn't it? Blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Well, so those people over there, right? Nobody in here is poor in spirit, right? We started to wonder what it would be like if we read all of these as blessed are you who are poor in spirit. Blessed are you who are mourning. Because these are us. These are us. Most of us have run out of faith at some point in our life. Most of us have grieved at some point in our life. Most of us have been meeker than we wish we had been. I know what I should have said 2 days later. I wish I had. And so there's a place in this for us if we're willing to claim that those is us. And those is us. We don't even like this reviled or persecuted language. That's just, it's tough to deal with, right? Reviled. How many of you have reviled somebody this last week? Right? I mean, it's not even language we use. Maybe Gayla has. But, you know, not language we use anymore in our day-to-day speaking. So we struggle with some of this. We wonder. We wonder what would it like to be really persecuted. Really persecuted for our faith. Because we've got it pretty good. We've got it pretty good. Then we get to salt and light, and you may remember that I completely destroyed an entire basket of popcorn 1 year in the children's sermon with a lot of salt. Salt is one of those odd things, right? You can tell when it's missing, right? But your doctor will tell you not that much. Not as much as you're putting on there. What does salt really do? It preserves food. It's used in canning. It's used in other things. It enhances flavor. So there's this piece here that we tend to read and we just focus on the salt of the earth. What do we use salt for? How many of you sit down and go home and go, let me pour out a bowl of salt and let me snack on this? Max does in the back. Careful, I will call you out when you make faces at me. Right? We add salt to something else. We add salt so it's better, so it tastes more, so the flavor is bigger. So what happens if that's how we as believers, as followers in Jesus Christ, are to be in the world, to make it a bigger, a more robust, a grander, a better experience for everyone else? Well, that's a little different, right? Danger, of course, as we talked about, is that you can't really take salt out of something and just add it back in later. Right? There's a difference in if it's cooked with the salt in it or if you're salting to taste, as we say. We've often got faith like that as well. Faith is just added at the end on top, and you can tell it's not cooked into the whole thing. So how are we salt of the earth in the ways that we actually use salt? That's a big question, rather than just sitting here and going, well, salt, okay, salt of the earth, next. And it ties in, of course, to light of the world. Right? I mean, okay. This little light of mine, I'm going to, right, you know it. We're spoiled for light. We're spoiled for light. Every one of us has a flashlight on our cell phones. We can make our homes as light as we want whenever we want. We can make our rooms as dark as we want whenever we want. It doesn't matter what's going on outside. It can be light or dark or whatever we decide we want. And so a lot of us, well, we just don't think about light anymore because it's under our control. We'll just make it work the way we want it to. And then the power goes out, right? And we learn that light doesn't always work at the flip of a switch. And that things change. That a light can be seen from a long way away. If you have a light on a post in your yard, it is pretty indiscriminate. It gives light all the way around. If we are walking with a flashlight, we pretty much put it where we want to go, right? Wherever what we think we want is. And the thing is, we don't always know who else is benefiting from that light. We don't always know. I think Jesus is telling us to just put the light out there and be content that the light is out there. But there's a challenge to that. A city on a hill cannot be hid. I mean, how visible is a light in the darkness? Growing up in North Carolina, there's still World War II memorabilia around, and some of it was you needed to have blackout shades because the German ships could see a light for 2 miles. No cigarettes. Cigarette coal glows for 2 miles at night at sea. I complain that my headlights get dim driving 55. We often don't live in darkness. We've gotten used to a certain level of light. And so until it goes away, we don't realize how powerful it is. So the power goes out, and you're halfway down the steps to the basement. It is suddenly differently dark. Go to Mammoth Caverns and go down and go down and go down to where there's no light filtering down, and let them flip the switch and turn off the lights, and it's dark.
We're in a coal mine.
Yeah, coal mine. Go out in the country here on a clear night, see stars you can't see otherwise. We often throw light to get where we're going, but we miss who else might use that light to navigate by. That's one of our challenges, is to take this stuff seriously, because the end piece of this passage is thorny. Okay, the last three verses are thorny, because they seem to undo some of what we've just done. Oh, the meek get this, the comforted get that. This is good. Good stuff. On the other hand, Jesus says, those of you who teach people to do the wrong thing, you will be the least of these in the kingdom of heaven, which reminded us of the joke, what do they call the person who graduates last in med school? Doctor. Least in the kingdom of heaven is still pretty good, I would think. But it closes out with, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven unless you are more righteous than the scribes and the Pharisees. And we struggled with this morning. Is that a high bar or is that a low bar? How does the crowd hear it? How do we hear it? I mean, we don't think too incredibly much of scribes and Pharisees, do we? But what did they hear? How does that work? What does it mean to get into the kingdom of heaven? We had a long, long, long discussion, took up most of class, about whether heaven is out there or heaven is right here. And there were some opinionated, I know it's going to surprise you, there were some opinionated people in Sunday school in this church. felt very strongly that heaven is right now, and if we're waiting for something later, we're doing it wrong. I think that there is a peace there that we need to regain, because that's not always the way we understand it in the world. A lot of Christians want to get into heaven, and once they've got that, they're good. They're good. They're done. And these passages seem to push back on that. These passages are one part of the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, so often we'll split them up. You just get the Beatitudes one Sunday, you'll get salt and light the next Sunday. Next week, we're still in the Sermon on the Mount next week. It's this little insignificant thing called the Lord's Prayer. And then the week after, it's Matthew 7. We're still in the Sermon on the Mount. How do we hold all those pieces together? That this is one time of Jesus teaching the disciples and the crowds. It's not this one and that one and that one and that one, and we just lump them all together later. This is one worship service. This is one Sermon on the Mount. Ultimately, here Jesus starts us down the path of doing. The passage that we skipped between last week and this week was Jesus calling the disciples. So last week we had no disciples, this week we have disciples. This is the first thing he really teaches them. On some levels, this is the basics. We have often tried to make this advanced Christianity, but this is the basics. What is trapped in the basics? Be salt. Transform the taste of the world for people around you. If Benjamin and Tricia were here, their favorite passage is "Taste and see that the Lord is good." We've just come through Advent, and the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Be the light of the world. Transform the way things look for people around us. And don't worry too much about where the world has you ranked on things. The meek will get theirs. Those measured as poor, Luke just has poor, Matthew has poor in spirit, will get the kingdom. The meek will get the earth. Those who mourn will get comfort. It all cycles around. I want you to notice that Jesus never says, God will give you these things. Just that we will get. And it moves from a promise, a for, to what we're supposed to be. We are the ones who are supposed to bless the peacemakers. We are the ones who are supposed to comfort the mourners. We are the ones who are supposed to bring the meek into fullness of life. And so this challenge, this is Jesus saying, this is Christianity 101. This is intro level stuff. Scary thought, huh? We've made it common. We've made it domesticated. We've cut salt out of our diets. We can buy a canister of the Kroger stuff for like 44 cents. It's not worth anything, except we notice when it's missing. We take for granted light in our lives, except we really notice when it's missing. Tom, you notice the light differently after your cataract surgery, don't you? Look at this passage not as just aspirational, but as how we can tell when something is missing from us, for us, and by us. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.